and welcome to Avashin Podcast. In this podcast, we welcome guests who are waging a struggle. My name is Frederike Gerink. I'm a journalist who writes and speaks about power and those who want to break it down. This podcast is powered by Media News, which you can visit at medianews.net. Let me explain why this podcast is called Avashin, meaning blue water. Avashin is a region in the mountains of Kurdistan, where the river by the same name has its source. The Avashin is clear, blue and sparkling, and an inspiration in the Kurdish struggle for freedom. In this episode, I'm honored to welcome Winnie Cheche as my guest. Winnie lives in Nairobi, Kenya. She's an activist against climate change and believes that human beings are custodians for nature, whose duty it is to protect it. Welcome, Winnie. Very nice to have you here.
Thank you very much, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
can you first tell me what the source of your struggle is, where it all began for you?
Okay, so for me, I love wildlife. I really do love wildlife plus animals. And at the moment, I am a mom to a very pretty cat. Her name is Snow. So as I was growing up, I grew up around Lake Nakuru National Park, that is in Nakuru County, whereby poaching was somehow normal, which was not a good thing. So that is people are eating the game meat because it was cheaper than the domestic animals. And now as I was grew up, I knew like this is something that when I grow up, I would like to like tell people against it. And as time went by,
Tell people to
stop doing that, like for them to stop poaching and eating the meat, instead for them to protect our wildlife. And then as time went by and years went by, climate change came into the mix. So whereby I came to understand like, okay, wildlife is really suffering the climate factor, but it has nothing to do with it. So by default, it pushed me to activism. So that's why now I fight for climate, but now my heart is solemnly on the wildlife factor because I do love animals. Yeah.
What kind of poaching was going on there? What kind of animals do live in that national park?
We have relatively like almost all the animals, but now the one that I really witnessed, now the one that unfortunately I ate part of the game meat was for the buffaloes, because now people could... So they would go during the night, and then now they'll come in the morning and sell the meat, because now it was already legal, it was cheap, so it would like go fast. And even when the rangers will come to the village, like people could hide the poachers and not like send them out, because they would see them as the good people who are bringing us our cheap meat, because also it was not like a well-off village.
So it was not illegal.
It was illegal, but now
Now
we were helping to hide them from the rangers because we saw them as the saviors who could help us get meat at affordable rate.
But that
was bad, and I'm happy like it has changed, because at the moment as we speak, like now people are speaking up. They are like, if you poach, someone is going to report you. So at least now that one was stopped, it no longer happens.
So you grew up in a small town or in a village and not in Nairobi?
Yeah, so I didn't grow up in Nairobi. I grew up in Nakuru, although at the moment now it has grown to being a city. But that time it was in a small village that was next to the Lake Nakuru National Park.
Yes. And you came to Nairobi to study or to work?
I came to Nairobi after finalizing my university. So I came to look for a job. Now that is another thing. I did wildlife management, but unfortunately, I was not able to secure a job in that field. So I had to go with what came on the way because of the bills and everything. So blogging and everything is, and the activism part of it is what like brought me back again to my passion and my degree. So at least I can see that all is not going to waste. So I say like, okay, I'm still struggling with that part, but I'm happy that I did not lose the connection, because at the moment I'm working on the internet part of it. Like I help people with their internet issues, but now my degree was on wildlife conservation. So that is now what like comes out on my website and on my posts. So I really try to continue pushing for it, because wildlife is still in my heart, and I really hope, like, one day, one time, whereby we don't need rules or we don't need to be police to protect the wildlife, but we coexist with them and at peace. So there is no problem. Like, if there is no ranger, no one is going to protect the wildlife. I would like a world whereby all of us, we see wildlife as part of the ecosystem and not just part
that of... That you don't planting. Need like a police force or something like that to protect it, that people naturally protect their own surroundings.
Yeah, sure. Because I think they are a gift to us. Because, and that's why people will travel miles and miles away to go and witness this wildlife. So if we, some people, like, treasure it, why do we have other people, like, see them as just a nonsense, you know? So that is the point. Like, I would like all of us to be on the same page to see, like, these are wonderful animals, which you, good enough, you were not able to domesticate them. So they are still unique to us. We may never understand them with all the time that you have on this planet, but they're there. So they need protection, and they need, like, they don't need to fear us. We have to take them as our heritage, but not like we have to be policed or we have to be forced to take care of them. Like, when you're making decision, let's have them in mind, not like we check on our profits first, then now we can, they come second. No, their needs should come first, then their benefits.
But what you also say, and I find that interesting, you say people travel from far away to come and see our wildlife.
Yeah.
But when you're also a climate change activist, maybe you don't want all that traveling either, because it contributes to climate change. How do you look at that? Because you connect wildlife protection with fighting against climate change, right?
Yeah. And now that one, I will go back to basic, whereby I insist on, like, we are the custodians. So if all of us, like, protected wildlife where we are, then I don't think we really need to travel to other countries to appreciate their wildlife. Because we check from those people who travel more, like, most of their wildlife are either on captivity or in zoos, right? Because the land was taken away or something happened, so the wildlife is no longer roaming around. And now the other side of the coin is, for us who still have the free roaming wildlife, not all of us appreciate that privilege. We still see them like maybe a nuisance because of a human wildlife conflict, or maybe how the population is growing. So you find that we don't really appreciate that, and we see it as something for the tourists. But if all of us, like, took care of what we have, then it will, all of us will be like, okay, I don't need to go to Tanzania to go and see their wildebeest. We have our wildebeest in Kenya. Then I'm happy to see, because when I was a child, I never had an opportunity to enter into the Lake Nakuru National Park because it was expensive. But I enjoyed wildlife from the fences. I didn't have to pay anything to see the wildlife. And that should be the case, like, everywhere where we have wildlife. So, you see, like, it was free for me. I was not spending anything. I was not emitting any carbon footprint, and I was able to, like, view the wildlife. So if that's...
You just walked to the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you see, what is the effect of climate change on wildlife in your country?
Okay, so as we have seen, like in Kenya, like, droughts and floods, there have been, like, if we don't have droughts, we have the floods, right? And you find that in most cases, when such disasters happen, you will rarely see any help being directed to the wildlife. So even if it is the, like, saving of the people, only people are going to be extracted from that location, but no one cares what happens to the wildlife. So if we have the drought, wildlife will have nothing to eat, right? So they will end up in people's farm and destroy, and maybe they'll be chased back to the national park where they're supposed to be. So that connection is one of where I come back, like, when say, like, climate change, like, is unfair to these animals, because it's like they are tied to one location. They don't have an option. And when it comes to their health, yeah, no one is really showing that big help. And you find that if it is there, it is for the endangered species. So what happens, yes, and a species may not be endangered right now, and so it may not be a key priority when being saved, but that is what is going to
lead to extinction. One second, can you... You're talking, I'm going to cut this out later, don't worry. Can you talk a little bit slower?
Oh, sorry.
I love your passion, but you're going really fast.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Can I ask that question again and then you start your answer again?
Sure.
Sorry. I'm also going to edit some music in for people to take a breath now and then. I always do that, but yeah.
Okay.
What is the effect of climate change on wildlife in your country?
Okay, so in my country, as yet, it has been for several years now, we have been like experiencing droughts and floods because of the climate change. And when these calamities happen, they do happen to areas that do have wildlife. But the problem is, when we are saving the people, like maybe when we are rescuing them, giving donation and everything, all the concentration is given to the humans, which is not a bad thing. It is the human thing to do. But what happens to wildlife? Who thinks about wildlife? When there is drought, all the rivers are dry. So where does wildlife get water? Because this is the moment we find that most of the wildlife will end up in people's land, and they will, now we have the human wildlife conflict, and everyone will be busy pushing back the wildlife, not really giving it a thought as to why was this wildlife forced outside the park where it's not supposed to be. And you find that even if we have the rescue like missions, you'll find that it'll be concentrated on the species that are considered to be endangered. So the assumption being that the other ones don't need saving, which I don't agree with, because the same circumstances that we are forcing these other species to will lead them to being extinct. So why don't we save them where they're still big in numbers? So if you're saving the people, have a plan to also save that warthog, even if it is not like important to you, because you find like the other day we had the giraffes were being saved. Yeah, they're endangered. So they were airlifted, which was a good thing. But what happens to those simple warthog or maybe the wild dogs and everything? They do need help. So they need to be put in this plan to understand that it is an ecosystem. And when you are hit by a calamity, it is hitting everything that is living. So everyone has to be put into account too and be protected, not being left just like that for the fate to take control. So that
the giraffes were airlifted?
Yeah, it was in...
I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, it was in Baringo. Yeah, in Baringo we had like...
Did you see it happen? Were you there?
No, it was on news.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in news. So whereby we have like all the lakes in our Rift Valley, they flooded, and now we had some giraffes that were trapped in an island, so they had to be rescued. I don't know if they were airlifted or they were taken by boat, but they were rescued now from the island to now a nicer area, so they didn't have to suffer the fate of the flooding, you know? So those are the lucky giraffes. But now,
when climate change has effects like flooding or drought, yeah, there is sort of a competition going on between humans and animals. And the humans sort of win. But if there's drought and people have to extend their agriculture land, because if they don't, there will not be enough food. There's a balance that has to be found somehow. What would your solution be?
So like that one, what will happen will be like for wildlife, as we have seen, most of the wildlife do not live within their conservation areas. They live with the communities. But over time, that relationship continue to like become apart because people are changing. Long time ago when we had like people would do, those people near the national parks would maybe practice pastoralism. Now that one is now taking care of the animals. So when according to the seasons, like they would move around. So that will help them coexist with the wildlife. But at the moment, you find that people now are moving to farming of crops, right? So they are no longer moving around. So they are like stationary. So how the animals like could migrate and change their pasture, that one is no longer happening. But now for humans, nothing has changed much because now they were able to shift from the animals to crops. But now for wildlife, now they no longer have time to like rotate the rotation. So if they have taken the pasture inside the park and maybe they need outside, now they no longer have that dispersal land to go to and to eat from before they were from where they had eaten from, like grows up. So there's no that rotation which has not been put account. So if you could have like this community continue practicing like maybe farming or activities that are friendly to wildlife, then now we could continue having that coexistence, because that is the link that is missing. because of the farming and everything. So their land is continuing being smaller and smaller, and it's not like for the big herbivores. You can't have them, and that's why you are not able to domesticate them. You can't have them confined into this tiny place. They need to move around. But you see, now that humans stop moving around, they don't have an option. No, they are left with this small piece of land whereby the rivers are going, so they no longer have like a watering point. So if you don't have like a NGO which decides to go and create a water point and be donating water, what happens to that wildlife in that area? So I think the main problem here is the practice. We change the practices that accommodated wildlife in our areas. So we moved.
And what can you do as an activist? What can you do? What kind of activities do you carry out to try to change these dynamics?
For me, what I usually push is for the indigenous knowledge. You know, if we all listen, because as I told you before, I did like a wildlife management and everything, but things are very different when interacting with these people, the local communities who live with this wildlife. So if we really started listening to them, like how it works and how they existed, because they still have these stories, they will tell you how their grandpa were able to coexist with the elephants and the lions and everything, and they didn't have like the negative human conflict that we are seeing that at the moment, we can be able to return to that relationship. But now the problem is we are going with what we think we have read in schools, pushing that to the local communities, yet they have the solution to what really needs to happen for them to have that relationship that they had with wildlife. So I think it is time we stop like imposing to them what we think is right, and for them to like really tell us as per the indigenous knowledge, this is what we worked with us, this is how we coexisted with them, you know, and this is how we were able to make sure that this wildlife, that we didn't have these big conflicts, because the conflicts are supposed to be there. Even in our homes, we do have conflicts here and there among the family members, but we coexist. So I think it is time we listened to the local communities, you know?
And so it's interesting because you went to university and you studied wildlife preservation.
Yeah.
But still you think maybe I should also let go a little bit of what I learned at university and or at least take it, but take the knowledge of the people there as the starting point of change, right?
Yeah, true. I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's them, like we really, because they're the ones who understand. Like that theory part of it and practical, it is very different. And if you can see, even when they're explaining and giving you examples, and even for existing project, you really see that theirs work, because ours is rosy in books and it is perfect in theory. But when you put it practically, it is not working. And the moment that you need these people, the local community are the people you need them. So for the wildlife to thrive, you really have to be in line with these guys. So if you're not in line with them, even if you have all the best knowledge you can have in this world, you will not be able to save that wildlife. You have to work in hand with them.
And climate change is, of course, very much caused by, in general, not by countries on the African continent, but by rich Western countries who have much more industries. And they are the polluting ones. They are causing the climate change in your country. Do you also have an international network, or do you try to connect with people in other places in the world to hold the people who are causing the climate change accountable?
Yes, I do. For now, I can say, like, thanks to the writing and everything, I've been able to connect with like different people from the in the different parts of the world. And I can say, like, from how I began this process is very different from how I am right now. And what I've come to learn with time is on social media, we can do a lot. We can talk a lot. And you know what is happening there is everyone is talking from what they're experiencing, you know? So for me, I'll be angry that I'm contributing very minimal to climate change, but I'm getting all these consequences, right? And now my friend, maybe, for example, from Europe, doesn't really understand that. From them, they're like, okay, this is the awesome technology that you have come with. It has made life easier. It has made more income and everything, you know? which they're right from their point. But when they come to this side and they see like actually what happens, that is when now it hits them that all of us are speaking from very different pages, you know, and everyone feels they're right from where they stand from. But now when you change ideas and you take to places, that is when you understand like, oh, this is happening. I'll give you an example. Like on the previous UNEA meeting, one of my friends came from
Australia. Were in a what meeting?
UNEA, the one for the United Nations Environmental. There was that meeting in March for the plastic treaty. One of my friends came from Austria and we took him to Dandora. So Dandora is one of the like the biggest dam site we have in Kenya. So we now for them, they like produce plastic back in Austria and they do everything. Now you're having a discussion whereby you are saying, okay, how we don't need plastic, the single use plastic and everything. And now they were telling us how plastic like has helped us. But when you took him to the site and show him like, this is what people are living, like people are living in this garbage, this is what has happened to our environment, our livestock.
It's all European plastics being dumped there.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get papers that even you can't find them in our markets, but they're in the dump site. And then now he was like, now I get it. Now I see it from your point. Because for me, it was convenience and everything that was happening. But in my head, I didn't have this picture of like people having to consume plastic through food, or maybe the livestock consuming that plastic and people are going to eat that livestock, or the drainages have been clogged because the plastic bags are being dumped there, you see. So now these are two different worlds coming together. So when it comes to like what we see for climate change, we have to really see from both sides. Even if it, like I used to joke with my friends, I think these big climate meetings, they should not be taken in the fancy hotels. We should take them like in Kenya, we have the one of the hottest areas like in the Northeastern. Why not take that meeting in that place? Or maybe in the ocean where it has been polluted so that people can really see the picture. Because the presentation and the photos seems not to be working. Let us take them to where the problem is happening. Let them feel it. Let them experience it. Maybe from there, they can now take things seriously. Because from what you can see is we have a lot of talking and everything and come up with the best decision. But when we go back to our countries, we do exactly the opposite. Whereby at first you may be angry and you may not understand why they're doing that. Maybe for them they'll justify it with profits or maybe the benefit of the greater good, but they now they don't see the small percentage of this person choking in plastic bags or this person doing 1, 2, 3, 4, because we don't
it's kind of weird, because I was thinking of international networks also trying to hold big corporations and governments of Western countries accountable. But you actually also have to fight against the lack of knowledge of people in Europe, for example.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think
that's maybe a little bit demoralizing, or not?
Yeah, it does. And then you are like, okay, what am I doing? Because people, I think, climate change just came up and blew up, and we didn't have like sufficient time to really understand what is this climate change and how is it affecting all of us. Because there's a lot to more apart from just making noise and everything. I think it is time we just sat back and like really understand, what is this climate change? What am I doing as a person? Yes, I'm pushing the government. I'm talking against what they are doing bad, or maybe I'm pushing for what countries are not taking action. But me as a person, how am I contributing to it? Because that is a big organization and everything, but it is a sum total of me and you and the next person, right? So the moment we start like getting it from there, now we can be able to push. So even if you go ahead and say like, oh, this company is doing, has been there leading the top 10, the top 3 in the plastic pollution. And you know, and then they just fail and tell you like, okay, but we pay for the recycling or we provide employment. But now you'll take that opposite and say like, I would rather sleep hungry, but in a safe environment. Rather than you saying you're providing for me.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Like, I would rather sleep hungry than like be in a pollution with all this amount of money. But now that is not how everyone is seeing. Everyone is saying like, okay, no, yes, I'm polluting. And that's why now you see most people don't really believe on the carbon credits, because it's the thing like, I can produce all the carbon I want as long as I'll pay for it, you know?
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's but like that doesn't make the world any bigger.
Exactly. It's like you're being arrogant about it. Like, as long as I have money, I can do whatever I want because I'll pay for it. What you forget is that one kid who is going to be affected by all this and die. They may be insignificant to you, but they may be a whole world to someone else. So that is what we are missing. So I think we really have to go back to the basics. We have the science, we have everyone, even now in religion, they are pushing it. All that is present, but we have to understand, to get back to, is it inside our hearts? And that's why I wish I just said, like, for me, I'm trying to like make people fall back in love with our planet, because we no longer love our planet. We have changed it to be, we are loving it conditional. So if I have money, I can enjoy life. If I don't have, I am miserable. Or if I have money, I can make everyone else's life miserable and live the best life ever, which should not be a case. So we really need to go back to the basics.
Yeah. And is the climate change movement in Kenya big? And what kind of things do you do? Do you go protest on the street? Do you organize boycotts? Do you organize education in schools? What do you do?
So for us, being a third world country, we still don't have like this enormous freedom that I wish we had, like whereby, because for me, right now, I'm still careful. Like there's some things I can't really say, even if they're bothering my heart, because I'm not rich enough to have bodyguards and everything. So I have like to protect what am I saying and how am I saying it and which years are going to fall through. So we still don't have that big freedom, but we do try. We go to the roads, we go to the protests, and then you work with the government. But you find that even when you're going to ask for that permit for you to be able to protest, like they're very curious, what are you going to say? Like you still don't have 100% freedom that will say that we see in the Western, like they can be able to say anything and everything. No, that is not in our case. And whereby, even if you say, you know, now you get starting blacklisted, so you're like, some company cannot employ me, because they think, for us, they mostly think that as long as you are climate activist, you are a criminal. They don't see you as
is a that really actor. Is that the perception in general in Kenya? If you're at least in the corporate world and in politics, like if you're a climate change activist, then you're half a criminal?
Yeah, like they see you like a trouble. So they say like, okay, that person, yeah, they will not work with you. So you find that even for me in my CV and everything, and even if you check like...
But if you say if they say you're a troublemaker, maybe you would say, yeah, I am. I want the world to change.
No problem is when you say that, you'll not get a job. No one is going to work with you.
You don't get a job, true.
Yes. Yeah, and then now you'll not have to, you'll not be able to pay your bills. So you're left like you know that omission. So whereby you do this activism, but you push to a certain level. Like you are trying to like test how far can I push it. But now in your head, you're consciously always awake, knowing that let me not push too far to endanger my life, or maybe to create a thrift because you still have family and everything. And now also because people like the other, like we call them like the common manage, like the other people that you're trying to like pull them.
You
to
call
the cause.
Them?
Common wananchi, like now the other fellow citizen, you know, we are trying to all of them for us to speak the same language. So for you to reach them, you also not, you are trying as much as possible not to be seen like the hard-headed or the troublemaker. You are trying to help them understand that, okay, I'm really trying to do a good thing here.
And are you successful in that, in gathering more people?
I say, personally, I've been able to do that. Like, I'm able to have, like, friends for, even in government that I talk against and everything when I'm calling out on something they do, I still do have friends there, you know, and we talk and everything. Like, because when I'm pushing, I don't like the negative activism whereby, like, you guys are name calling. No, I'll just, like, ask a truly concerned question and tell you, like, this is my question, this is what I think. What is that? Like, I believe in everyone respecting each other's opinion, and you don't have like to push yours inside me, but you also understand like from my point. So at least I'm thankful I got that voice. Like, I can be able to ask comfortably, like, this is what you guys are doing. I don't like it, and I'm seeing it is leading this way. And as an organization, what are you doing about it? You know, so you'll just like jokingly ask it. Like the other time I was just playing with people's mind, and I just tell them, like, minus the cameras or maybe being given grants or no one checking you, would you say we have true wildlife conservation? And I was amazed with all the messages I got, and everyone was like, no, we only do that because it was on the camera. Or I know if I do that, I'm going to get a possible grant or maybe for my name, but you are not doing it truly for wildlife. So if all the fame, no one recognizes you, so that means you wanted to do something good. Because we have that, some people who do that, like they're very vocal and everything, but they're not doing it for the greater good. They're doing it for other things, you know? And that is not what has led us here. Because if for sure all of us from all the COP that we have been having, now we are going to have the 27th one. If all of us did what
the 27th, the 27th what?
The COP 27. So far we have 26 COPs, right? So if all of us were true to ourselves, what has been spoken in all those meetings, if for sure we really meant how you were doing in those boardrooms, the hard talks and everything, do you think we could be where we are right now? That could not be the case, because it has come out like we just do it to be seen how argumentative we are up there or how decisions we have awesome there, but our actions are completely opposite. We go home, we forget, we wait again for another year, for another meeting, another tough talk, and then we move on, which now is costing other people their lives, you know? And those people who are there causing, they even maybe don't know these meetings happen. They are like, they totally live in their own world. Like the one that I've told you for the droughts and floods, the most affected people, like in my country, they don't even have that TV to see the floods, them being shown on TV, being affected by the floods or drought, they don't have it, you know? For them, even for
water. Do you talk a lot to local communities who are affected by climate change, by droughts and floods? And do you like travel around in the country or?
Yeah, I do volunteer. There's one organization called Young Muslim Association. So it does the, like the donation mostly on the northern Kenya, where we usually have, it is prone to drought. So they usually have donations. So I am a volunteer to there. So I usually do attend to those events, like be able to take part of it. And it gave me an opportunity to like talk to these people and get to their end. And I'm telling
and
you.
Is that where you're coming from, the north? Or is where you come from another part of the country?
No, I come from a very different side of the country. Okay. So I come from Nakuru, and now that one, Nakuru is more like on the Rift Valley. So, and for them, it was on the northern side of the Kenya. So luckily,
the north is like the hottest part of the country and the most affected by drought.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it's where we have the arid and the semi-arid land in our country. They're all found in the... Most of the parts are found on the northern part of Kenya, because also they like practice the pastoralism and everything. So vegetation has been really affected. So we don't have much of the vegetation cover or even like the stable farming and everything. It is only on like they take care of animals and everything. And also like poverty has really like taken roots in that side of the part of the world. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for them, like, they don't know about climate change, and they're the one getting it squarely, but they have no idea what is climate change or anything. They just know one day rain stopped raining, and if it comes, it creates floods, or if it goes away, we suffer drought, you know?
It's those more seen as a natural fluctuation and not something that is created by men.
Exactly, which is really sad, yeah.
Yeah. So... As an activist, maybe you think things are going a little bit slow, or you're being too easily seen in your country as a troublemaker when you stand up for nature. But still you're going on. So you must be having hope somewhere that things are changing or will be changing. What gives you hope?
So what gives me hope is the fact that the young people, like the young people no longer follow the what has been taken like the normal, like if you are fear the elders and you don't want to speak your mind, we are like we have accepted we don't know much, and we are willing to read more about climate change, talk about, ask questions. So that is like it really gives me hope, because we have not just sat down and felt sorry about ourselves. We are here saying like, okay, you guys are not going to take our future away. We really need that future and we are here to fight it. We don't have what it takes, but we are willing to work with what we have. And that is the biggest hope that we are really holding to. I know we are not going to enjoy the fruits, but at least our kids are going to enjoy what we are doing right now. And that's what makes me happy.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much. And may you be successful. The Kurds always say Serkeftin, which means may you be successful.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Avashin Podcast, powered by Media News. Your host was Frederike Geerdink. The music you heard was composed and performed by Ulash Yashil. I would highly appreciate it if you shared this podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or wherever you hang out online. Thank you in advance, and until the next episode of Avashin Podcasts.